most number, if it doesn't matter on order. Sometimes, for instance, if you reverse these two, you don't have the same effect. So sometimes you have to put them in a certain order. Others, if you're listing them, like you want to let him go here, here, and here, and you know that they go here a lot more than they go here, you'd put the one they went to more first.
Anybody coming in on my Ethernet line can only get onto my iPad where my FTP site's at and only onto my website.
Absolutely. The question is, theoretically, I could set it up so that people who dialed in with a certain user filter could only do certain things, and you can limit them right down to exactly what you let them do. You could let them only access FTP and not web anywhere. You could let them FTP to anywhere in the world and never do anything else. You've got all that kind of control and filters. Yes?
What kind of message do they get? Like if he did that,
they get broken wire. It's just not there. They don't get any message. They just, there's no wire between them and the places you don't want there to be wires.
Now, if they're sending mail or somebody that's not in that group of land, it's going to go to an SMTP mail server or the mail server.
Because they're going to forward it through your server, your server's in your network, it will get in. But you're now starting to ask the kind of questions you have to ask when you build filters, and I'm not going to even attempt to say I'm going to teach you how to do that today, because there's just no way. They are endless. It's months and months of study to do these, to understand everything you can do with filters. What I want to point out is your iPad has one of the most sophisticated filtering structures you're ever going to find in a router. And if it can be done with packet filtering, the iPad can do it. Sure. We need one of those.
You say that the iPad is a router. I would assume you refer to that if you're not having any kind of an Ethernet network. Let's say you're just going to put the router on, add your modems, and hook up to the Internet, and that's it. You wouldn't have any other machines attached.
That's correct.
Okay. So if you are going to have an Ethernet network, then you would have some sort of an external router.
Okay. Remember our routing class this morning. You have now two routers. The iPad didn't quit being a router. When you added a second router, you now have two. So it didn't change anything about the iPad itself being a router. It just took one interface over to another router. We are really now down to short on time. I was going to start to do a lot of experiments here where we showed how to hook up V35 cards to the iPad and hook wires up and stuff and do Cisco routing. And I'm not sure I've got the time to do that the way I intended to. I suppose what I'll ask here briefly is, are there anything left right now that people strongly still think they want to learn in a category that we haven't covered? Because I don't want to miss that if somebody's got a specific issue. ICBM? Actually, why don't we just stop right now and do that, Chris? And then after that, we can go back and do some other things.
The MPI part is going to have to split.
Okay. Sure. Let's see, this is the video here, maybe? Okay. It doesn't reach. What am I doing? Oh. Oh, I see. That's an extension cord. I got it.
Yes, that goes.
That's why that wasn't a black plug like for a while that I was looking for. Right. It all makes all kind of sense now.
This goes into the CPU.
Right.
And that goes into the CPU.
Right, and that goes into the LCD. I was trying to do this while you were doing the reset up there. Yes.
We're only set up to actually pretty much the way your modems and our iPad. Not knowing what
the other people have, but this is the only one that we've set up. A normal ISP has a router, then they have a DNS server.
Oh, you're asking about how do other ISPs that don't have this little box do it?
Yeah.
They do it with roomfuls of equipment to start with. Spend a lot more money, but what they generally have, I would say the most common, and there's variance at every level because it's a real component setup and people use different things, but the number one most common things that ISPs have is they have probably 2 to 3 Sun workstations on which they've got some of them their DNS, some of them their FTP, some of them their web servers, all those things, their mail, are spread across, I would say, mostly 2 to 3 minimum. At a minimum, ISP's probably got 2 to 3 Sun workstations. He's got a terminal server, probably several, because terminal servers are modular and plug in. He's probably going to use Livingston Portmasters if you were to pick one that's most common. Second one that works real well is CompuTones. You see a lot of those because they're very much better at high speed. Livingstons really don't do 28.8. They run 28.8 at about 2,000 CPS instead of 3,300 because they were really built long ago in the 9600 baud world. They suffer from having been too good for too long. So they were built in a world when this kind of speed wasn't there on serial lines. CompuTones run real fast. They do the 28.8 real well. You can, by the way, leverage the fact that Livingstons don't do that well, don't go at 28.8 well. If you have an iPad, your dial-up will generally be perceived by the caller to be nearly twice as fast as other providers who use Livingstons. And it's all in the Livingston Portmaster that you're seeing because the iPad will do the 28.8 and the Livingston really won't. And so you'll hear those comments, and that's a lot of why you hear them, is the terminal server side of the issue. They'll generally use Cisco routers. Small ones will use one or two of these 2501s. Bigger ones will probably go to the 4000 series if they want to be, you know, serious in their mind. And generally, like I say, in the Livingston Portmasters, they may have 3 or 4 of them stacked up. They may have probably 3 Sun workstations. They'll probably have 2 to 3 Cisco routers to do a small ISP that's roughly the equivalent of an iPad. All the Suns run on Solaris, which is a form of Unix.
And they're much more liable to be spoofed than...
Well, they're doing what everybody knows you're doing. And so that's they're the most known configuration, so the people who are after them have the most understanding of what they're trying to attack. You put this box down, from the outside it looks like it's the same sort of a setup, and every time they try to attack it, they're going to be mystified because all their tricks won't work because it's not a Unix box, it's not an NT box, they don't know what they're even going after. So you're protected to some degree just by being a mystery.
Does the iPad log any of
that? It logs some of it, but most of the attacks and stuff, it doesn't look like an attack, so no, it won't really log a lot of it.
One of your best forms of security is by just not telling anybody.
That's what I said before yesterday. That's the master lock security thing. And it's, you know, the old misdirection is one of the best security measures there is. You make something look like one thing when it's something altogether different, and they keep trying to attack what it looks like. Yes?
I have another question that's been bugging me for a long time, but I asked Adam, and he just said, well, don't worry about it. What's the top...
So I guess that don't worry about it is probably not the answer you want from me, right? Okay, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Are we getting closer, Chris?
The top half
okay.
of the...
I hope I didn't screw the configuration too bad on you there either. Okay. I tried not to save all those example files, but I think I hit save on the editor a couple times. So if the iPad doesn't come back up, it's probably going to be one of those obvious changes I just made as an example.
The top half of the iPad screen, you know, the bottom half, you get all your dial-in lines.
Right.
What's the top half do?
What's the top half do? What the top half does is it tracks all your telnet lines, and that's going to change in a future version. It's going to become optional. You'll be able to have different ways to put it together. The way it's set up now is based on the concept that it's high probability you're going to be hooking it to TBBS. And if you don't, the top half of the screen's got precious little meaning. It monitors those telnet connections. When you make telnet terminal lines, it tells you what's happening on them. And basically, right now, it's fixed and unadjustable. And in a future version, it'll say if you don't do any of those, that top half will go away because there's nothing for it to talk about. And it'll make the middle half bigger, which is what you really desperately would want in that case.
But that was my second question. Could you make the bottom part bigger so you can see more?
Not any way to adjust the screen on the current iPad. You can use control page up and down to move down and look at things. So if you've got more things that would want to show in the middle than are really there, which happens a lot, you can use control page down. Or you can go in maintenance telnet and do a stat act con, and it'll list it all because it knows it can put it all on your screen. Are we ready? Okay. ICBM is the iPad Complete Billing Manager. It's really set up around people who run this as an ISP to handle what is the most critical part of running an ISP profitably. And that's not spending your soul managing the accounting and billing and collection system, because that can cost you more time and money than any of the rest of the technology, because you're doing a ton of small dollar transactions. And if you spend very much to collect them, you spend more than you made on each transaction. ICBM is set up as a server and a client. We have here our Windows NT box, which has our website server and also our ICBM server on it. Currently, ICBM can run on a server can run on anything, including a DOS machine that is on your LAN. The key structural thing is that the server you run the ICBM server on has to be able to visibly see the same file areas that your iPad control files live in, your mail auth file, your billing files, your log files. It shares those through LAN access. So if you have to configure your server somewhere in a LAN structure where those log files are on a drive that's accessible from the same machine that you put your ICBM billing server on. And that's really the only requirement, is that you have to be able to share those files with the iPad. The ICBM server sits on this server and runs itself and does all of its tasks. And then you can have as many instances of the ICBM client as you want. So this is built with the concept that you might have a couple of customer service people who answer phones, and they each have their own terminal. They each would run this client, and they can run it all at the same time, and it all works. Basically, if you want to look up a customer, and Chris, you know what you've put in here, and I don't. This may be something where I talk about it and you do it because you know the national names. I think you put yourself in here. So if a customer calls you on the phone about his account, you'd look him up. He's got a customer ID. And you'd look at his account. This gives you all of his information. And let's say, I want to know how many times he's called up. He's telling you that he hasn't been able to get in for the last month or whatever. And these are the services I've authorized him for. He's got dial-up and he's got FTP. He's bought those things. And I want to know, he's used a total of 40 hours and 4 minutes since the last billing interval, but I want to see his detail. I want to see, whoops, that's the wrong one. I want to see his dial-up account. I want to see all of his log. Right. This is every call he made. So he called on 6:10, he got online SO1, and he was on for 25 minutes and 20 seconds. So I'm not buying the I got disconnected in 3 minutes thing. On the other hand, back here on the 8th, he was on for 4 minutes and 14 seconds, so when he told me it hung up on him after 5 minutes, it might be true. When he tells me, when I tell him he's been on for all this time and he says he hasn't, I haven't used any 20 hours. Don't give me that. You say, well, yeah, on the 8th, you were on for 17 minutes and 50 seconds. This is it. You can print this out. You can send it to him. And you can show him everything he did. Now, when you create a new service in this, you create first your, when you first get ICBM, you decide on your products. So let's go to that area. This may not be doing this in the right order. I may be going to drive Chris crazy here, but let's go to the configuration program, which is over here on the server.
You can bring it up here.
You can bring it up from here. Okay, good. This is how you set up ICBM when you first get it. And what you do is you decide that you're going to have certain products. You're going to have your gold, your bronze, your platinum program, and they're going to be made up of certain kinds of configurations.
Which version are you showing?
17.7? Yes.
I think it's the currently posted beta that we're using.
Does this one have tax support?
No, it does not.
Yeah.
This version has the new web CGI.
Okay. Did you put in account
tax returns.
Yes, that is going
yes.
to be in the core release.
You can put in account tax classes, and you can put all that in so you can say what they're going to be, but it doesn't fully do it yet.
Okay, has Adam or yourself just put a test web page up, just HTML files that we can grab that has all the stuff the CGI
should
do?
Yes. It's extremely, you'll see it here in a minute, okay? Yeah. Please hold this kind of question from people who have ICBM. I'd like you to hold that till we tell the people who've never seen it what it looks like. And then, because if we keep doing this, we're definitely going to run out of time. And then I'll be glad to go through the rest of those questions about details. But first, let's paint the big picture of what it is and what it looks like. So you set up your service billing plans. And what you do is basically create a plan, and you have certain kinds. You can have a dial-up account, which has characteristics, a domain name, a mailbox, FTP, or miscellaneous is any service you make up you want to give a name to. So if you have a dial-up account, for instance, what you would configure is the name of the plan. This is my bronze plan, my platinum plan. This is my three-day excursion plan, whatever it is. And you say, when I buy the bronze plan, am I buying it by 1 month? Am I buying 3 months at a time? Am I buying it every 6 months? How long when I buy it, how long does it last? Am I supposed to advance bill? Is this a plan you pay before you use, or is this a plan you use and accrue and then pay afterwards? You make your choice there. Set up transaction code and billing transaction codes you put in here, and these are just the names, I believe, of what these codes are called, right?
A code that's defined elsewhere.
It's a code that's defined elsewhere that says that this transaction code for setup says, does this account have any kind of a setup fee structure? And if it does, you put in the transaction code that you've defined elsewhere that says, whenever I set up a dial-up account, there's this kind of a startup fee structure, and you've defined that elsewhere. So this is a dial startup.
Now, this is what will appear on the customer's statement.
Right. And billing transaction code you put there, and that's what's going to show on his statement when he's billed for this.
Is that dial startup the same thing as an activation fee? Is that what you're saying?
It's anything you want it to be. You will define it and give it a name, but it's anything you decide is a one-time charge when he buys into this account. And then over there, you'll break down what it's all about.
Can you set up complimentary accounts?
Absolutely.
Yes. The
question is, can you set up complimentary? We'll get to, if you let us get through this, you'll see that this lets you have a lot of flexibility in how these things work. Billing amount, it's $30 to buy this thing. Base hours per period, so he gets 50 free hours. And then it's hours billing code. And it's additional hours, and that says he'll be a dollar an hour afterwards. After he's used 50 hours, it's going to cost him a dollar an hour. The billing code, again, hours billing code, says that's going to show on his statement. If he used 57 hours, he's going to get a bill. It's going to show $30 for bronze, and it's going to show $7 additional.
The period length, that means that he can have 50 hours in total.
Spread over 3 months. Yeah. That's correct. Spread over 3 months.
This next field, hours on monthly cycle, says the hours are, 50 hours per month for each three.
Right. Cycles. The hours on monthly cycle, yes or no, lets you pick. Did you give him 20 hours a month for 3 months, or did you give him 50 hours spread across 3 months? Because if you give him 50 hours spread across 3 months, then he uses 10 the first, 30 the second, and 10 the third, he's still under his 50 hours. If you said monthly billing cycle and you said 10 hours, he used 10, then he used 20, he'd have additional for that month, even though he paid for the whole bulk over across time. So all those kind of variabilities are built into it. Period limit says cut him off if he's run up a bill bigger than this. Just make him know, make his account go inactive if his bill gets bigger than this. It's called, I know this guy, and he won't pay me more than $100. So if he runs up a bill bigger than $100, shut him off. And auto-expire service is for the things you were asking about, complimentary accounts. You might have your special three-day trial.
And you make an unlimited complimentary.
And you can make an unlimited complimentary account. It just puts $0. It doesn't cost anything. And doesn't expire. by having a 3 at expiration, people call up for your low-cost introductory 5-day special. You put them in, and then when it's over, it shuts itself off. You don't have to keep track of it. Now you have here basically a set of plans. Why don't you go down and show all these different plans, if you can, from here, so you can see how they work.
This is a
domain name. It's a 24-month account. You pay once every 24 months. Am I supposed to advance bill? No. There is no setup fee for this. It's a one-time bill, standard domain. You're going to pay me $150 a year for me to take care of your domain name for you. This is a web account. It says you've got your own web page, let's say. And for that, you're going to pay me $10 a month. And it's going to expire in 45 days. What does that mean? If you go more than 45 days and don't pay me, your web page goes away. Email alias. That says that I have my own mailbox. That's a pop mailbox. And I'm going to have a pop mailbox. It's going to cost me $1 a month per pop mailbox. And I can have as many of those as I want.
Is that the same thing as an additional email box?
That can be an additional email box. Yeah. Understand what these mean. And this gets back to DNS. And this is the hardest thing to explain because people would really rather I made this a lot more limited so I could tell them it was one and only one thing. The fact is, these services represent whatever you want them to. You make them up, and you decide what they mean.
What is an email alias?
It's the name we gave to that plan. If you don't like it, which I can tell you don't, you could have called it Popbox.
Well, it's an anticipation of a service, specific service we're going to define later on for each customer, which were an email alias, as you'll see later on in the client, is an alias on an existing mailbox.
Right. In other words, one of the options you've got is to have a pop mailbox that takes mail for several different names into one box. And so what we're saying is, we've set this up to say an email mailbox, and you might like to call this just a pop box, and you might want to call this a pop alias. You can do that. You make these up. It's going to cost you $5 to have a pop mailbox, and every other name you want it to respond to, we're going to charge you $1 a month for. You don't have to charge it. I could say it's free. I could do it for nothing. I mean, it's totally up to you to define your products and how you put them together. This is just sort of an example of a way that we think maybe somebody might want to do so we could show you something. We had to make something up to show it to you.
Otherwise,
all you'd see is blank forms. Exactly right. And now the key here is that the monthly period billing is a real critical feature, and this is, the beta people know, is one of the more recent and more important features that makes us a lot more valuable, and that's things that you don't pay for monthly. ICBM does its cycles on a monthly cycle automatically, but something that goes over several months now, it understands every month is a piece of a build towards a final amount. Yes?
If you're not using this, you order this, put it in a machine, it'll automatically use your codes that are in your accounts now, bring them in, or are you going to have to re-put them in?
You'll have to do that yourself.
You have to build these codes yourself. If you've got old log files, you can suck them in for the data and start charging people immediately.
Yeah. 50 people I've got would automatically be sucked into their...
No, you have to put their names in here and start their accounts.
See, ICBM completely manages the files for dial-up access, FTP, and mail authority. So once you implemented ICBM, you don't touch those files ever again.
Right. Remember all the files we talked about authorization and pop mail?
Right.
You don't ever touch those now. ICBM will create those for you, and you do everything from this console as a client. And so you have to go in initially and set up all those 250 accounts again in here one time. Pardon?
It's going to rewrite to those accounts and we add those people to it.
Yes, that's correct. And that sounds like the voice of experience over there. Make sure you get them all in there. Right.
We have all of that information except for possibly some of the identity track set up on a database already. I noticed that's a Fox Pro database.
No, there's no import programs now. I'm sure down the road there will become them, but there are none right now. Is the shuttle here?
No.
Oh, okay. So a head sticking in the door here. Pardon?
That shuttle's not going to come until we call it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
Oh, no, 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 no. Anyhow, this is what a user looks like, and Chris, maybe you want to talk to what these parts are all about. This is pretty simple.
This is just the billing information, where you'd find the customer's name, their company if they have one, and their billing address, also their phone numbers, and how they're going to pay you. The payment methods can be cash, check, or credit card, and if you fill in a credit card number here, ICBM will automatically check that card to verify that the number at least sounds right.
The billing is a separate part, and ICBM will, on demand, do your internet, your credit card billing. Currently, the only billing modules that it has are to access directly through dial-up a Teleflora account and to manually prompt you to run an offline account. In other words, you can bring up a client, and it will give you each credit card. You run it through your Verifone or your 800-number dialer manually and say pass or fail. Where it will, I believe, before release, if at all possible, have what's the other name of the other one? I forgot it.
IC Verify,
which is getting to be a pretty big, widely used credit card system. We're going to try to get that built in automatically, too, before it becomes final release. And yes, just does it all automatically. You come in and say, do it, and it runs it. Does all your credit card billing for you, generates all your reports, and generates invoices. It can generate invoices to your customers by email, by printed, however you want it to do it. And it can do all those things. Reporting functions, they're significant ones. Let's try to go through this in somewhat in order to show how you would handle an account. Let's say that a customer wants to buy a service. Are they here? Okay, the shuttle's here? Okay, I guess the shuttle is actually here, so we're probably going to have to break this up. Pardon? They can wait 5 or 10 minutes, as she says. Tell them to wait about 10 minutes. Wait 20? That's what he waits. Wait a minute. There's some revenge going on here this morning. He made him wait 20 minutes. They're going to make him wait 20 minutes, huh? Okay, let's say you want to add a service. This brings up the kind of services that you've got to pick from.
Now, let's use the mailbox alias as an example.
Right. We want to alias a mailbox.
So we select the additional mailbox service type and type in his pop user ID, which should be... Oops. Blaze, and it's going to automatically search for my previous mailbox instance, and then you go down to the mail alias 4, and
say chris.blaze.
So. Right. And then select the billing plan, which we're going to use the email alias, which is $1 a month, and that's it.
And as soon as you fill this in, the important thing to understand is as soon as you filled that in, it's done over there.
Cool. It'll update it.
It'll update it.
It takes, you find a period when the ICBM server on this machine will update that information.
But you don't have to do anything else to make this all happen. It might be 15 minutes later that it really goes into effect. You also have the ability to tell it to do it now. You can go here and press a key.
Go to services and signal server for immediate
update. Signal server for immediate update. If you made a bunch of changes, you can go kick it, and now as soon as you've done that, you know it's done.
And it just showed up here that it updated.
And you can see over here on the screen, you can see the server just did the update. It just updated all the iPad files. The ICBM product has a list price of $17.95. Right now, we're selling it in pre-release for $1,100 with free upgrades and free service until it's released. You'll get all the keep going. Once it's released, current iPad owners on the day of release will have 45 days during which they have an option to buy it for $13.95, after which it's $17.95.
They can get it now for $1,100.
You can get it today for $1,100 in pre-release.
Car special. The one thing people really got to remember is that they have the database when they go to install this. Don't think about turning on the ICBM server until you've entered all of your customers.
Right. Right. What Kingsley is saying here is right. Is when you get this, you're going to sit down with this client and start entering all this data. Don't turn on the server till you've caught all your data up, because as soon as you turn it on, it will go make your iPad do only what you've got entered so far, and it will make all the rest of it go away. So you have to get all your old data entered before you turn the server on.
And backup.
Backups are always wise when installing new software. Yes. But yes, as soon as you start filling out its database, when you turn on the server the first time, it will make your iPad be that way. And normally it'll shrink it down when you've only put a little bit of data in. So that's the issue. That's absolutely the case. Can you show the web CGI here pretty quickly? That's one last thing. One of the other things it has is a web CGI during which your customers can come to your website, put in their name and password, and get their current account data. On their own, they can look and see what they've run up in the way of a charge. Now, this particular version is a pre-release that has this web CGI on a very poor polling schedule, so it takes it about 15 or 20 seconds, sometimes as much as a minute I've seen to get the data back, but that'll get corrected very quickly.
This is a great feature that you can use to sell your service if you've got competitors. Competitors don't have it, unless you're selling unlimited service.
Right, and the bottom line is that this is current as of the last time it ran a billing cycle, which is normally midnight every night. So it's current as of midnight last night. This is what they had done. Now this screen, this is very blank. You can write this in any HTML. You've got a lot of options for what you put in here to make it look like. This is the absolute bozo minimum. So you type in your name and your password. You type check account status. Again, like I say, you can draw this all up, make it real pretty, put your logo on it. You know, it's just a screen you can put in any way you want. And then when you click it, it fires the CGI. Goes off and tests this, and like I say, right now, unfortunately, the server is only polling this on a very irregular basis, so it takes a long time. But what comes back after this is your account status. Well, it's taking even longer. Just for this demo, it's taking even longer, apparently. That'll get fixed. Original CGI went straight to the files, and it had a couple of problems. It meant your web server had to be able to see the files. It also meant if your web server locked up, you could hang the database open. So this is just the first change to where the CGI mails a request to the server through a communications file, and the server does it and mails a response back. Unfortunately, the server's only looking for that file, it looks like, about once every minute or so.
I think we may have a setup issue. This is new. Adam said it should only take like 5 minutes.
Right? Okay, 5 seconds. So we may have screwed up something. Anyway, this is what you get back.
Ours comes back just almost in a heartbeat.
Okay, so we've screwed something up in setting it up here then, okay. For us, it's always been real slow. Anyway, here's what you get back. You get your usage account, when your account was opened, what billing plan are you on, when does your account expire, what's your billing period, what's your billing date, what day of the month, because it keeps track of everybody on their own billing date, what's your billing period amount, included hours, credit usage, and you've currently used 40 hours and 4 minutes against this plan. So a user can come in and check this anytime he wants.
I've been told the shuttle's coming back in 30 minutes.
Oh, okay. He didn't wait. He went away to come back, huh? Boy, oh boy. So we've got a half hour, so I can quit thinking that it's all over. I'm sure I can burn a half hour here real easy. I've been trying to rush through this. Have I left anything out?
No.
I think I've at least grazed most of the things it does. Yes?
How about if you have services that people will come over the internet and not be dial-up?
No, because you, well...
Well, you could bill them for things like FTP and web pages and all that stuff, yeah.
Email or...
And pop email, if they want to have pop email, sure, you can do that.
But not, like,
how... Well, if they're not dialing up, you can't bill them for dial-up, yeah.
No, I mean, but for making time on your system, like, if at some point you could look up a game server or something like that, or...
You would have to. This system has an option... where you can, and this hasn't been published yet, but there's an API where you can have something generate an offline transaction, format it in a certain way, and dump it into the account, and you can make a miscellaneous account that's based on how much of whatever this is that comes in. And so a game server, but you'd have to have something on the game server to generate and collect the raw data. ICBM wouldn't know to do it. If it generates it, spits out the records, it would import it and then add it to this billing system.
So would you be telnetting the game server? Could it not distract you telnet minutes?
Telnet minutes, you could, and all those kind of things. I don't think this keep, does this keep track of telnet minutes?
No, it does not.
It does not.
But they are indeed on the...
They are in the billing log.
So that could be.
That could be done, yeah. Okay, I guess... since we got an extra free bonus time, are there any general questions about any part of this that you guys would like to go over?
Do you think you're ever going to put a videotape or anything like that together on the training by CBM at all?
I would love to, but I told you last time I went to do a videotape, I discovered it was going to take me 3 months of my life to do it right. I don't want to do a crap one. And so I really just didn't have the time. And so it kind of fell down because of that. I found out that it takes a lot more to do than it looks like. We tried to film one of these classes and cut it up and make it. It was just nothing. It was not filming a live class and then try to turn that into a videotape that's meaningful. Videotape training is a very different style than live training. I learned very quickly. And it takes a lot of effort. So I would love to do it. I want to do it. I wouldn't expect it to happen anytime soon, given how much time I've learned it takes. I don't know about training on ICBM. That would all be based on demand. That's right. Yeah, for $3,000 a day plus expenses, I'll come visit. That's all true.
What about this class? When are you going to try to hold another one?
We were going to try to hold another one next month, and it proved entirely too aggressive a schedule, so we're not going to do that. I would say we'll probably hold another one this fall.
Maybe
September, October. It really is based on when it fills back up. I mean, you know, how many people we can get in here and how long it takes us to fill it back up. I'd love to hold it every day and think I'd be able to put a different set of people in here every day, but that's not going to happen. So, but realistically, it's a lot of work to set up to run the course like this, and we were going to try to do it every month, and we just really found out that wasn't going to work.
So sending out flyers.
We will. We absolutely will. August, because of the one ISPCon situation and my involvement in that, I can't do this and that as well. So September is the September is the next possible month that we could do it. We haven't made a decision yet. If we thought we could fill up a class by September, though, we'd probably do one. So we'll probably start trying to put out flyers to see.
How many boxes are out there right now?
How many iPads are out in the field? It's over 300. I don't know the exact number. It was over 300 a while back, so I'm safe at saying over 300. I don't know exactly how many there are now. But it's over 300.
I know you said a little bit yesterday about limits on the iPad box as to whether this is ideal for you.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations?
The limits on this box, really, it's not like there's a hard and fast limit where you do 75 of something and it works great, and you do 76 and it falls over and dies. It's not that kind of a limit. It's just generally, the iPad was built to address sort of medium-sized applications. And if you start getting really huge with it, you start to find out that it just, all the things about it that were nice start to get to be a problem. In other words, you end up with 53,000 configuration lines in your mailbox file, and it gets to be a management nightmare. Ultimately, what happens is at a certain size, which is pretty sizable actually, it'll start to just slow down a little bit or not run well. And it does that pretty gradually. I mean, it doesn't do that just overnight. But obviously, if you want to run 56 gigabytes of email a day, you don't want to do it on an iPad. You're going to want to buy yourself something, a pretty serious Sun workstation, because it's the only way you're going to get that kind of capacity. You're going to have, one of the things that we've done, unfortunately, with PCs over the years is we've made it not at all relatively understandable what takes a lot of computer power and what doesn't. The server functions take awesome amounts of computer power. The ability to do something like this on even a Pentium PC with a lot of memory. The iPad does some amazing tricks to get done what it's done in the small amount of memory and small amount of CPU. There are people who, just like I faced with TBBS for years when I said you could put 64 lines on a PC and run them all full speed. You may remember when this room was full of computers when I staged the test to prove it was so. Because nobody believed that you could do it. And the iPad, to some degree, is in that regard. Unfortunately, the iPad is suffering exactly the opposite. People who it's intended for have no experience with what it has always taken in the past to do this. So they assume it's a magic box and that email's easy to think about. It must be easy to do. Can't take too much computer, can't take too much disk. It's a very intensive process. Takes a lot of machine and a lot of disk to do. The iPad does it with less resources than ever, but it's not going to run tons and tons of stuff. Basically, the thing to understand about the iPad is its mission. It's not intended to replace real servers. It's intended to let you hook to real servers easily and take that part of hooking up to the internet that is nasty, ugly, and sucks the power out of servers and put it off on a box. The term I've coined for this kind of box is a server amplifier. If you take a Unix box that was being a server for DNS and email, and if you tried to do dial-up to it, and with NT that happens more because everybody's we're walking the same walk again. They're telling you RAS, just plug it right straight in and it'll be a terminal server. And you put all that stuff on it, and you put 32 lines on it, and you put a web server on it too, you'll discover your web server doesn't run for anything. It's because the whole server has been sucked dry doing all this other stuff. The second thing is, because you're using a general purpose structure to do a whole bunch of little bitty things, you end up with a scattered administrative mess that gets really easy to make unmanageable. So the iPad is to collect all that stuff and take it off the server, so if you have big email jobs, you can put up an email server and nothing else. And if you have big web server requests, you can put up a web server that doesn't do anything else and get maximum performance where you need it. And then to take the functions of routing, terminal serving, DNS, and take all the complexity out of them, drive them into a box that you spend 20 minutes configuring, you bury in the backyard, and don't touch. That's what the iPad's built for. So whenever you start to try to use the iPad as a server in a heavy-duty way, you're really starting to do something that it wasn't intended to do. Now, it will do that and to a lot farther degree than you would expect, but ultimately, you're going to grow something up. Think of it as an incubator. You're going to start with an iPad. It's going to do everything. Then you're going to get users, and they're going to want to do a lot more of the everything. And eventually, your web server will get really full. So you get a web server and move it off. Maybe your email gets really full. You might end up making an email server and moving it off. That one usually comes much later. Or you might divide it, put your pop boxes on the iPad, and do everything else on something else. And it grows up. And if you watch how this has gone over the years, that's exactly it. You plug an iPad in, and it grows an installation around it with people who never could have built that installation if they hadn't started here and been able to grow it one by one.
So as far as using it for purely the routing capabilities of that...
So there's no limits to that.
There's no limits.
It's as good a router as you're going to get.
If I was talking about, like, 3 Class C addresses...
If you're talking 200 Class C addresses, it'll route them all just fine.
But the email side, if all of them were using email, I might go to an email server.
You might. The first thing you're going to want to move off of there is the thing I really wasn't going to put in this box to start with is the web server. Because you're going if you have a lot of web server activity and you start getting 3 million web hits a day, this is a box that up to about 500,000 web hits a day is just fine. You get much more than that, you need a server.